Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns, without Deshaun Watson and Joe Bitonio, pulled off the huge upset of the previously unbeaten 49ers behind practice squad quarterback P.J. Walker. The defense made a strong case for it being the best in the league. The run game reappeared, and Dustin Hopkins made four more field goals. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. How's it going, Chud?
Scott, it's going great. I mean, a victory Monday makes Tuesday a lot easier, makes the week much more sweeter. And you know what? It went just as we predicted, just as we thought that the Browns would upset the best team in the NFL. I mean, you know, in all honesty, you know, you said that if Deshaun Watson would have been out there, you were going to call for a Browns victory. And, you know, our scores weren't all that far off. We both had the Niners at 20, and if they make that field goal, they do get 20. But I don't think we were completely far off, but yet we were really far off, because just like everyone else, I mean, who picked the Browns to win? I'm in a family picks pool, and no one but my 11-year-old daughter picked them to win. I mean, was there anyone out there that did pick the Browns? I'd like to know.
Yeah, I think I saw one online.
Okay.
And then I'm in this text chain or text thread, whatever it is, with a bunch of buddies. And actually, I was getting ripped because I predicted 2017 loss.
Right.
And one of the guys was going, oh, my gosh, it's not going to be that close. And then there's one guy that picks the Browns to win every week. So he picked the Browns.
Yeah.
But, right, I'm with you, Chud. And, like, we talked about how the game could go for the Browns to be close. And actually, it's how it went, pretty much. But it was just impossible, in my opinion, to pick the Browns with P.J. Walker versus the 49ers as well as they had been playing.
Really unbelievable. And, you know, you got to look at, I guess, you know, factors are this. P.J. Walker didn't lose the game for him, although he did try there at the end. But the defense, I mean, and I'll admit, I was still holding back on the defense a little bit. But that it's kind of tough not to believe in this defense now close to 100%. I mean, you know, whether you want to call it a championship defense or not, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, we haven't seen a defense like that, especially since they've been back, right? I mean,
I mean, I don't know if I've seen one since maybe the Belichick, like, 94 year with Saban as coordinator. That defense is really good. You know, I was at college, so I didn't see every game that year. But they were good then. I don't think they had – I mean, they had some good players. I don't know if they had the stars, you know, like a Myles Garrett and a Denzel Ward. I don't know if that unit had those kind of stars. I'd have to go back and look. But even in those late 80s teams, I mean, the defense was good, but it wasn't dominant, right? It was Bernie and the offense that carried those teams, I thought. So, you know, and I never want to get ahead of ourselves too far, Chid, but to have the performance it had – to play like it has over the first five games, where really the only significant hiccup was that second quarter against the Ravens. And, you know, I know they're legitimate. I think they're probably the best defense in the league. You know, I mean, through five games, 1,002 yards is the only team since 1970, it's third all time. There's only been two teams that have given up fewer yards in the first five games. And I think those are both like 1970 and 71. So they're playing at an incredibly high level with a ton of confidence. We can't give Jim Schwartz, the coordinator, enough credit. We've talked about it a million times. I thought going into the season that he had been the biggest upgrade on that side of the ball. And I still didn't think the impact he would have would be as big as he has had.
I'm not going to lie, though. I did panic a little bit after that first drive, because San Francisco did that so easily, and I thought more was going to come. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, Lamar and the Ravens did their number on him. Now the Niners are going to do it to him. So I did get a little nervous there that, oh, boy, when they play these tough teams with the great offenses, you know, because let's be honest, Cincinnati, Burrow, you know, the injury, Tennessee, you don't consider a high-potent offense. And the Steelers, I mean, they haven't been that – I mean, great on offense this year, and they had the one big play. So I did get a little nervous there.
Yeah, I get you. And, you know, I think it's you know, it's important to remember in hindsight that Kyle Shanahan, the play caller for the Niners, is outstanding at scripting plays. I mean, he's outstanding overall as a play caller. But the Niners lead the league in points on the first drive. The Browns helped him out with a couple of 15-yard penalties. So it wasn't, obviously, it wasn't a great start. Far from it. But the fact that the Browns were able to bounce back, and really until the last drive, where they had the chance to kick that winning field goal, the Niners did not do much at all. And they finished the day with 215 yards. I mean, 215 yards, Joe, they were averaging 400. Brock Purdy looked human. And part of that was him. You know, I think the weather affected him a little bit. He didn't throw great. But a lot of that was the pressure that the Browns get up front and the coverage that they play in the back end. And I thought it was really interesting. I think when we did the pregame podcast, we talked about the motion that the Niners use, right? And they can confuse defenses, and that was going to be a key to the game. How the Browns handled it, according to Juan Thornhill, the safety, was if a guy went in motion most of the time. Now, every once in a while, if the slot guy went in motion, nickelback or slot corner, Greg Newsom would follow that guy. But for most cases, if a guy went in motion, they would just kind of slide the defense. They weren't chasing everybody. They would slide it, but still play man-to-man. Usually, if you slide it and you let a guy go, it's a signal you're playing zone because then you just stay in your area. The Browns would still play man-to-man. They played man-to-man 71% of the time, which is a high number, and it's really high against the Niners because they have a lot of playmakers. But what the Browns would do is they would slide. So then, let's for an example, if Rodney McLeod, the safety, was going to have George Kittle on the left side, and he motioned to the right side, they would bump and Grant Delpit would take him on the right side. So they have enough flexibility. They have enough trust in their cover guys, not just corners, but safeties and linebackers too, that they said we can match up man-to-man against all these playmakers no matter what the matchup is. And I think that can be risky and you can get a bad matchup and hope you don't get burned. But it worked for the Browns and they really flustered and frustrated Brock Purdy with the man coverage they played.
So we've talked about this in years past. So this is coaching, Scott. I mean, this is coaching, putting them in a position to be great like they are. Obviously, you have to have the talent, but we've had the talent before, right? I mean, how many podcasts did we have where I would ask you, is this secondary really as good as we think it is? Right. And now maybe we're seeing how good it can be. I mean, walk me through that because I'm a little bit confused.
Yeah, I mean, coaching is a huge part of it. And it goes beyond X's and O's. It goes to culture and it goes to energy and confidence and all those things, all those kind of, you know, the intangibles that Jim Schwartz talks about, right? They want to lead the league in effort and celebration. And they're doing that. And it has affected the way they play and it's improved the way they play. Just his presence and everything he's done. Now, I think it was he kind of took over a sleeping dog, right? And this is not to crap all over Joe Woods, his predecessor, but Woods had pieces, especially in that back end, right? I mean, Denzel Ward, Greg Newsom, and Martin Emerson Jr. were all here a year ago. So was Grant Delpit, right? So was JOK. Now, Juan Thornhill's here, and he's probably an upgrade over John Johnson III. You know, Rodney McLeod is at third safety. He's an improvement, and it's a big deal, but, you know, he's still the third safety. And then they've made a big transition up front, right? They got Myles Garrett help. They got him Zadarius Smith and Obo Okoronkwo, and especially Dalvin Tomlinson and Maurice Hurst in the middle. Like, that's where the biggest talent change has been and the talent improvement has been. But part of it is scheme. Jim Schwartz's attacking scheme. But it's getting the most out of his players. And we're seeing a Denzel Ward that I think is playing as well as he ever has. You're seeing a Grant Delpit playing as well as he ever has. And JOK playing as well as he ever has. And I think, you know, obviously you got to give credit to the players, but I think you also have to give some of it to Schwartz. So it is coaching and it is talent. But you just can't, in my opinion, overestimate the impact Jim Schwartz has had. And that's really something. I mean, that's really saying something. He has transformed this defense, and it's spread beyond the defense. You hear offensive guys talk about the influence Schwartz has had, and the defensive guys talk about the influence Schwartz had on the entire organization. It's really something.
Yeah. I don't want to get too long-winded on this, but I want to make a point, and we can talk about this as weeks go on. But it's also about availability and who you have on the field. And how many times during a bad season when they had these bad records did you see nagging injuries, players not on the field? But you season and the vibes are good, and, yeah, and you don't have to be something special. Watch, you won't see as many injuries and guys leaving the field.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think you see that later in seasons, right? If you feel it going the sideways.
That's what I mean.
Right, yeah. I think, you know, you're right about that overall. Now, you know, if a guy gets hurt, he gets hurt. But, right, the kind of thing where all of a sudden you're really pushing to get back, especially in that final month, you know, I think right, that's – yeah, I think that's a legitimate point. And while we're talking about coaching, Chad, I want
– I don't
no, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't mean major injuries, and yeah. And that's why I said this is for discussion later in the year. Yeah. I just want to bring it up now because I was thinking about it the other day, availability and having your star players out there. I'm talking about those nagging injuries, sure, those, you know, as the year goes on, you know, right, and guys get tired and, you know, you have more of a desire to be out there. That's all I'm saying. It's not really a knock on guys pretending to be hurt or anything like that.
No, I got you. I got you. You talked about coaching before, and I want to get your opinion before I give mine. I'm walking through the concourse after the game, and somebody, just a fan, says something about, oh, great win, but Stefanski still tried to blow it. I see on Twitter that I saw a clip from the 92.3, the morning show with Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima, where Lima goes on this rant because people are calling in after the win and talking about fire, you know, wanting to fire Stefanski. So I don't know if I have a question, except like, isn't it hard to believe that they upset a team? They're 9.5 point underdogs. They upset that team with their third string quarterback, yet people still rip Stefanski. I guess one, isn't that hard to believe? And two, shouldn't he get a lot of credit because they pulled off this upset?
Oh, sure, he should get credit. I mean, I think that goes back to a couple of weeks ago when I said, you know, I go back and forth on him because there's games where, you know, you feel like, wow, he really is doing a heck of a job. He's arrived as a head coach. And then there's other weeks where I'm just like, oh, man, like, what was that game plan or why did he do that? But, yeah, certainly I don't see – now, what are the reasons that fans are on him for allowing – Walker to throw the ball into the end zone there at the end, or what's the main gripe with him in this game?
That's a great question, and I don't know that answer. I would assume I know that the Walker throw into the end zone has something to do with it, right? That I believe that was one of the things that popped up on that text thread I mentioned. That what are they doing there? But to me, it's more of a you kind of harbor this feeling, and then it just comes out regardless, right? Like, there's people that, and I don't want to make this a ripping the fan thing or focusing on the negative too much because the Browns are coming off an incredible win. But it's like the people that can't wait for Myles Garrett to jump off sides to rip Myles Garrett and ignore everything he's done, right? Like, I just find it kind of an interesting psychological study. But for me, the Stefanski, you know, first of all, I thought he had P.J. Walker prepared to play, right, which is not easy to do. The guy didn't take any reps with the first team until Wednesday. And he looked like he knew what was going on. Yes, there were a couple bad plays, the two interceptions. The near interception was terrible and, you know, almost cost him the game. But I thought overall, big picture, Walker handled himself well. I thought the – coming out of the bye, we talked about this on Friday, Chud, and I questioned because last year out of the bye, the Browns went down to Miami and got embarrassed. And I said, well, Stefanski needs to prove that he's got his guys ready. And he did, and I kind of forgot that he had won his first two games coming out of the bye in 2020 and 2021. But I was so focused on how bad last year was. Now it's, well, they're 3-1 coming out of the bye with a huge win against San Fran. All of a sudden, he's starting to – he's kind of got a resume there, right? Okay, he's a good coach coming out of the bye. And I think he proved that again against the Niners. the play call for the only touchdown they scored, that third one pitched to Kareem Hunt. You know, everybody thinks it's going to be a sneak with Harrison Bryant. So they take advantage of that because they've shown that on tape. They run it, a quick pitch to Kareem. I didn't notice until I was watching the game again, and I saw on Twitter too. They ran an unbalanced line there. So they shifted Wyteller from right guard to left guard. They went with more linemen on the left. They motioned Jordan Akins at tight end. Like, it was just a really well-designed play, and it gets them a touchdown. And it's a 16-yard touchdown, right? So that's a longer distance touchdown. They don't get stuck at the two and then have to figure out a way to score. It's an explosive play out of the run game in a good spot, right, where you can maybe try to take advantage of the defense. So I thought that was a great play call. And to go back to the near interception, right, Walker rolls out right. He throws back over the middle in the end zone, almost gets intercepted. You can blame – I get that Stefanski's a coach and everything falls on the head coach. Like, I understand that's the bottom line. The buck stops here. But your quarterback has to know better in that situation than to do that. Like, Stefanski doesn't have the ball in his hands there. The Browns were at the time losing by 1 point. So a field goal, which they wind up kicking, only puts them up two and leaves them in danger of losing on a last-second field goal, which is what almost happened. So you go for the touchdown there, and then you go for two to try to get a seven-point lead so you don't lose at the end of the game. A touchdown there changes everything about that final drive as opposed to only leading by 2 points. So I do not fault Stefanski for trying to make a play, for trying to score a touchdown there. And he has this guy, you know, Walker rolls out. I don't know if it was design rollout or not. But if it's not there, I'm sure Stefanski has taught this guy, throw the ball away. Don't throw it back into traffic, right? So, like, I don't have an issue with trying to go for a touchdown there. I just don't. And, you know, so I think everybody, it's like when something's in your head that you don't like Stefanski for whatever reason, not you, I'm saying the generic you, then it doesn't matter what happens on that given day. You find a way to criticize.
Well, and yeah, I agreed. But I will say this, though. Had that field goal gone in, and we talked about that quickly right before we recorded this. Usually we don't say much. Everything's pretty fresh on here.
Right.
But we did chat real quick before, and we talked about how – imagine just the difference if that field goal goes in, how long of a week this is. It's just crazy in the NFL. If that goes in, how different this conversation is. But I will say, if that field goal does go in, then you're sitting there going, all right, Stefanski gave them more time to get down the field, because by throwing the ball in the end zone, let's forget that it wasn't an interception, but the incomplete pass stops the clock, right? So the Niners had a lot more time to drive down the field. You could argue you didn't make them waste they have one timeout left. You didn't make them waste their timeout. You gave them more time on the clock. Then the defense, which was solid all game, lets Ayuk eat them up to get them back into field goal range, and then they make it and win. So then the conversation is much, much different.
Well, the conversation is completely different, right? You're talking about 2-3, wasting the four out of their first five games at home, all of it, right? You're talking – to me, the biggest conversation, and I could be wrong, but would be the defense plays great for 58 minutes and then can't hold the lead at the end, right? And that may or may not be a bogus argument, because it would have been realistic. I mean, it would have been what happened. That would have been reality. Martin Emerson gets the PI. They give up a running catch, and all of a sudden, they're in field goal range, right? Now, I don't think that changes if the defense played really well all day long. But that's how the conversation shifts, whether or not a field goal goes in the right upright or goes a foot outside the right upright, which is why this thing's crazy, which is why it's a constant roller coaster. And you're right to a degree about the Stefanski thing. I'm looking at the play-by-play now. The San Francisco called their second time out after the third down run. So if they had run it there instead of the incomplete pass, San Francisco would have been out of timeouts. But they still have – they get the ball back with a minute 40 left. Like, I don't think that really – if you only need a field goal, I don't think that changes things a ton. you know, I'm trying to look now. I don't think they called a timeout on their final drive. So, you know, so I don't think that that was a, you know, LeBron's wind up calling timeouts. The Niners spiked it before the last thing just to set up that field goal. So they didn't even need the timeout at the end. So I like going for the touchdown there. I think that's more important than burning clock is being up where you can't lose to by a field goal. Like, I think that's more important. So, I mean, I get your point, and I understand why people would nitpick, and obviously it looks terrible when he almost throws that interception. But I again, and I'm not like a super apologist for Kevin Stefanski. I just think people tend to blame coaches when a lot of times the blame belongs on the players.
Well, I guess it depends how you go for that touchdown. I mean, you're talking about a quarterback that, I mean, he didn't even take the snap on the play where they did score a touchdown, and he did throw two interceptions. So, I mean,
well, I mean, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's a valid point, right? In the next play, he took it out of his hands and said, "Hey, we're going to run the ball here,"
right?
And settle for a field goal, right? But you know, if there's a play call you like, again, it goes back to it's hard to win a game if you can't trust your quarterback to make a throw. And we saw that against the Ravens. And, you know, I guess you could say, hey, trust the defense. But Stefanski could argue, yeah, my defense played great. And San Francisco still had a 41-yard field goal to win the game, right?
Yeah.
So I think you can make the argument both ways. And at some point, you got to trust your quarterback. Now, maybe he'll never trust P.J. Walker in that situation again. And hopefully for the Browns, they don't have to have P.J. Walker in that situation again. And Deshaun Watson comes back this week. But I think it's a tough spot because they're probably not going to run the ball in from the 13-yard line. It's 2nd and 9 from the 13, and you could say, hey, they were running it well. I get it, but it's just hard to run in a lot of touchdowns. It just is. You need to throw the ball in this league, and I know people will disagree with that, but I think that's the reality.
Yeah. Last thing on the defense, though, do want to point out, and again, we're not telling anyone what they don't already know. Everyone said it. We've seen it on social media. Everyone's talked about it. But, I mean, they obviously lost. I think losing Deebo Samuel was a huge loss. It changes their entire offense with what he can do, running the ball, catching the ball, a weapon on that field. Then, obviously, McCaffrey goes down. That said, I thought they did a pretty good job on him overall, especially later in the game. But the Browns were without Deshaun Watson, Batonio, yeah, right. Nick Chubb. I mean, it kind of, you know, it evens out. You could even say we were with less guys. That said, I mean, at the end of the day, you did not stop the most potent 49ers offense, but you still stopped a very good one.
Yeah, no, it needs to be said. Those were two big losses. Trent Williams, you know, played this last three quarters on a twisted ankle. But that's what happens in this league, right? So, yeah, the 49ers, do they score another touchdown if they have all those guys the whole game? Maybe they do. And maybe the Browns lose and you're talking about a moral victory instead. But you got to overcome some stuff in this league, and the Browns overcame a couple of big, big injuries to get that win.
And Scott, usually it's our guy that misses the field goal in a situation like that. This time it's their guy. But I want your opinion on that penalty there. The broadcast team on TV very adamant that that was not a penalty, and we got lucky with that one with the refs. I might tend to agree after watching it. What are your thoughts?
You're talking about the unnecessary roughness on Tayshaun Gibson.
Yeah, unnecessary roughness. Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a good call. I thought live it looked like he drilled him in the head. I know I've seen the replay and it looks less severe. But I still feel like he launched. To me, it looked like a step and a fly with your arms up at the guy's head and neck. And I think that's the definition. You can't hit a defensive guy in the head and neck and you can't launch yourself. So it might have looked worse than it was, but I think you see that called 99 times out of 100 or 90 out of 100, whatever it is. I think you see that
even
called
without that
more than not.
Even though he wasn't lunging with his helmet, and I mean, his helmet didn't hit him.
No, but he made contact to the receiver's head and neck, and I think that's the key. It's not always do you make contact with your head; it's where you make contact with the receiver's head. And if it's head and neck, and you launch yourself, I think all that's considered. So yeah, I haven't seen like an official comment on whether or not it was a good call, like a Dean Blandino or a Mike Pereira. I'd be interested to see what they say. But I would venture to say that they think it's the right call.
Yeah, on the broadcast, they were adamant it was the wrong call. So I guess I was swayed by them.
Yeah.
Good take on your part. Might have to look into that more, but it felt like maybe we got away with one there, but good analogy on your part. Let's finish out with PJ Walker. His stats not great, but the bottom line is, you know, it's a win, and this is going to bring into 2 points here. I just sat there and I put this out on Twitter, and you know, many people agreed and liked it. One guy goes, "Oh, breaking news, Chud, great job." Well, I wasn't trying to break any news, but I was trying to point out, listen, we bash the Browns when necessary. Give this team credit right now. You know, Scott, they're not 3-2 if they don't change kickers, and they're not 3-2 maybe if they decide not to go with Walker in this game. I mean, we don't know how it would have gone the other way around because it didn't happen that way. But, you know, they made a tough decision, and we talked about that last week. Give them credit for understanding the rookie needs more time and making this move. And it kind of played out that way, right? I mean, this team's 3-2. Give the Browns credit for making these decisions that they've made.
Oh, I think that's a great point. And Stefanski after the game, when he got asked about Dustin Hopkins, the kicker, says, you got to give credit to Andrew Berry. He went and traded for this guy, right? So not only did they come to the realization, as obvious as it was, that they needed to get rid of Cade York, they went and got a legitimate kicker, right? They didn't just bring in a guy. They brought in a proven kicker who's really settled things down and, you know, gets all the credit in the world for maybe not as much as the defense, but right up there with the defense for that win on Sunday. They don't win it without Dustin Hopkins. So that's a big move. And you're right. I mean, I think, you know, if you want to go play the devil's advocate, you can say, well, why wasn't P.J. Walker starting against the Ravens, right? He's got this experience. The fact is, there are rookie backups in this league. There are rookie starters in this league. The Browns thought Dorian Thompson-Robinson was ready. They were wrong. And they realized that, and they didn't force it, and they went to P.J. Walker. So I'm with you, Dave. I do think they deserve credit. To me, it was an easy decision because of how bad DTR played. But that doesn't mean everybody wouldn't have made that decision, right? Some people might have been stubborn. They might have said, no, this is our guy. We're sticking with him. We thought he was going to be better, and it could have cost them that Niners game. So I think they do deserve credit for that.
They're 3-2, and they've lost a turnover battle in each game, right?
Yeah, it's crazy, Chud. They're like at the bottom of the league. They've only gotten 4 takeaways, and they're turning over. I think they have 12 turnovers, something like that. It's amazing. So they're right near the bottom in turnover margin, and yet they're 3-2. And I keep thinking that this defense is too good not to get a slew of takeaways. And I don't know when they're coming. Maybe they're coming Sunday against Gardner Minshew. Yeah, I think he threw 3 picks on Sunday in that Colts loss to the Jaguars. But they're good. I firmly believe that they are coming and that they're going to come in bunches. And if they do, and when they do, and this offense gets Watson back and gets some semblance of consistency, which I expect, then you could see, like, and I hate to predict lopsided wins. That doesn't happen a lot in the NFL, right? But I think you see comfortable wins. Like, that's the recipe, right? The defense gets takeaways. Your offense plays just halfway decent, and your defense is stopping everybody anyway, and all of a sudden you win a game 24-3, right? 27-10. Like, those are the kind of scores you could see if this defense starts taking the ball away, and I would expect that to happen. Like, it just feels like that's natural when you get as much pressure as they do and they play as much tight coverage as they do.
Was looking at the game notes. Stefanski 3-1 as a head coach following a bye.
Yep.
And that, you know, that goes, you know, that's a pretty good number there for him. But I heard this somewhere. This is not my original question. I can't remember where I heard it, but I'll ask you, was this a signature win for Kevin Stefanski?
Well, that's a good question. Well, you know, my mind goes to 2020, and it goes to that Pittsburgh playoff game, but he was at home in the basement with COVID. So you probably, I don't know, you probably don't get, like, he probably doesn't get that one. You know, could you give him Pittsburgh to get to the playoffs? That was a big one, even though Pittsburgh rested a bunch of guys. You know, they had a big win in Tennessee that year where they came out and threw the ball over the field and got a huge lead and then had to hang on at the end. The Baker against the Niners or against the Bengals.
Well, let me ask you this. Maybe the fact that, you know, he has drawn heat and things haven't gone his way of late, maybe looking at it in that regard.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of other, like, what I would compare it to. And I tend to agree with you. I tend to think, you know, I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment, but I tend to think you're right. Given the fact that they haven't been in the playoffs the last few years, given the pressure on him, given everything that's going on with Deshaun Watson and him not playing, and you have to go to PJ Walker, how well San Francisco had been playing. If it's not his best win, it's certainly up there.
Yeah, definitely top three. Just definitely something to, think about.
Yeah.
All right, before we move on and get into Deshaun Watson and the Colts and that type of thing, anything else from this game you want to hit on?
No, just real quick. I said at the beginning in my intro, the run game. I thought that was really important, right? If they were going to win this game, they needed to play a good defense. They needed to get a takeaway, and they got one. They could have gotten more, you know. More would have been nice, but they got the one Emerson interception. And they needed to run the ball. They needed to take pressure off P.J. Walker. And it wasn't always pretty in the run game, but they figured out a way. Elijah Moore had one nice run. Marquise Goodwin had a nice end around. They start with Kareem Hunt and then go to Jerome Ford and, you know, kind of mix it up with those two. Ford has 84 yards. I think Hunt has 47 in the touchdown. Like, I just thought – the run game had struggled the last 2 weeks and it needed to come out. And Niners had the second ranked run defense and they're good up front. And the Browns figured out a way to run the ball. And I thought that was really important.
Yeah, that's a good point when you bring that up. The Niners defense is really good. And I'm sure they're taking a lot of heat right now, losing this game to a non Deshaun Watson quarterback, you know, with the Browns. That's a great point. All right, let's talk about Deshaun Watson. What do you think? Is he going to be back?
Yeah, you know, we're taping this Tuesday afternoon, so hopefully it gets out Tuesday night, if not Wednesday morning. I expect might be too strong. I think we're going to see him on the practice field Wednesday. And depending on how that goes, we'll determine the rest of the week. We'll determine if he plays Sunday. If I were a betting man, which I kind of am, but you know, it's been a while since I've gambled. I would bet on Deshaun Watson playing. Now, I don't have anybody telling me that. I just feel like it's been a while with that shoulder. You know, we've heard conflicting reports. Kevin Stefanski keeps saying he's making progress. He's throwing as part of the rehab. So, you know, I think it's far from guaranteed that he's going to play Sunday, but I just kind of feel like he will. But again, and Stefanski also said, hey, we're going to be smart with it, which is kind of code for, hey, if we need to give him an extra week, we'll give him an extra week. So I don't know for sure, but I just kind of feel like he will. But I think we'll get a much better idea when he throws Wednesday at practice. That will be a great indication. If he's not out there Wednesday at practice, then I think we can pretty much rule him out because then you're getting into the practice week. He hasn't practiced in, you know, 20-some days. Wednesday is going to be a big day.
What other storylines should we be watching once they start practice on Wednesday to get through this week? What are we keeping our eyes on here with the traveling to Indianapolis?
Yeah, well, I mean, they should get Joe Bitonio back. You know, that 102-game regular season streak ended. He played 6,481 straight regular season snaps. Had arthroscopic knee surgery over the bye, and it's amazing that that's, you know, only going to be 2 weeks and he's going to be playing again. But I fully expect to see him Wednesday and then Sunday. I'm sure he'll manage the knee, but it must have gotten to a point that the knee just, you know, had been bugging him, and they said, hey, for the sake of the season, let's clean it up. During the bye, you missed one game. And the fact that they were able to steal a win makes it even better. I'm sure that made Joel feel a lot better for, you know, missing that first game since, you know, the last game he had missed regular season wise was 2016. And the only game he had missed since then was the 2020 playoff game in Pittsburgh because he had COVID too. So you get him back, which is a boost. You know, we'll have to see on Anthony Walker Jr., the linebacker. He left the game with a concussion. You know, the Browns don't do a lot of three linebackers, so they can make up with JOK and Taki Taki. Although the Colts do a pretty good job running the ball. They have Moss and then Jonathan Taylor's back. So, you know, maybe you see more Tony Fields or, you know, they could activate Jordan Kanasek from IR or, you know, Matthew Adams, somebody like that if they need to go a third linebacker. You'll probably just see more three safety, Rodney McLeod, if Walker doesn't come back from the concussion. You know, you got Bubba Ventrone going back to Indy. He'd been a coach there for a while. He left because he was mad he didn't get consideration for the head coaching job when they had the change last year. So a little revenge game there for Bubba. You know, but it's a lot about Deshaun Watson, and it's, you know, going in there. You know, right now, I think the opening line was the Browns are favored by two. I thought it'd be a little higher than that. The Colts did not look good against the Jaguars. A lot of that's Minshew threw those three picks, like I mentioned. But they lost their rookie quarterback, Anthony Richardson. So now it's all on, you know, now it's all on Gardner Minshew. You know, that's what's popping in my head, Chug. My, you know, I watched two of the Colts games, so I've seen them play three times this year. And my thought is the key is stopping the run. And the Browns have been good at stopping the run overall, right? They struggled a little bit against the Ravens. If they stop the run, then, like, that's the key, right? If they can stop the run, then I think the Browns win this game kind of easily. If they struggle to stop the run, and the Colts are good. Like I said, Moss has been impressive. I didn't know who he was until he was filling in for Jonathan Taylor. He looked good against the Ravens. He looked good against the Titans. He ran for over 100 yards against the Titans, and they never give up 100-yard rushers. And then Jonathan Taylor, this will be his third game back after the pup, and then he had the contract dispute. You know, he had an ankle injury and then the contract dispute. So, you know, the more he plays, the more he gets up to speed, right? So that's a difficult two-headed running attack that the Browns will have to take care of.
Yeah, they have a couple good receivers too.
Yeah, Pittman, Pierce, and then they got that rookie Downs, you know.
Yeah, and Moss came over from Buffalo, I believe, in that trade. But yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise for them. Taylor, I haven't watched him enough, but I've just seen the stats, and I think, you know, he's being eased back in, or at least – the bottom line is they're not fully just going to him. I mean, it's a rotation with those guys. So, yeah, you said two. Last line I saw was 2.5, over under 39.5. And the Colts are 3-3. You had already mentioned Gardner Minshew now at quarterback. Interesting here, after these home games,
Five or seven on the road, and you know, I like Kevin Stefanski, I like to take one game at a time, Chug. So I hadn't really looked that far ahead,
right?
But yeah, it means I'm going to be going on the road a little bit. We got Indy, then we got Seattle. I'm going to both those games. Going to Baltimore, and then I think it's Denver and LA. Wrap up those. I know I'm going to Denver. I don't know about LA yet. So. Yeah, it's a lot of road trips coming up, and that's a test for a team, right? We talk about, you know, just the adversity you have to overcome, the changes. The Browns, I'm sure, are used to playing at home, right? The only road game they played this year is the bus trip to Pittsburgh. So they got to get on a plane. It's a quick trip to Indy, but nonetheless. And they're looking to string wins, right? That was one of the things Stefanski said in his post-game talk to the players in the locker room. It's been win one, lose one, win one, lose one. And if you're going to make that run, right, if you're going to get to the 10, 11 wins needed to go to the playoffs, you got to win multiple games in a row. So that's the next challenge. And I feel like the Colts is a winnable game and a perfect chance for the Browns to do that.
Yeah. A game that if you are truly a team that's trying to contend to win this division and make the playoffs, you know, when you're favored on the road, you got to go in and win a game like this. You can't have a letdown. You need to string those wins together. right?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Now, you know, if Watson plays, then to me it feels like 100% what you just said. If Walker plays, then I think it's then the 2-point spread makes sense, right? Like Minshew's got, I don't think there's any question. Minshew's had a better career than Walker, right? He doesn't have a great record as a starter, but I think across the league, people would take Minshew ahead of Walker. I think the Browns would take Minshew ahead of Walker. So if you have the quarterback edge, you're playing at home, you know, it's not like the Colts don't have any talent. Like that makes a big difference. So if it's Walker, then the Browns are going to have to play really well, and the defense is going to have to play another big-time game. If it's Watson,
Scott,
go ahead.
How dare you? P.J. Walker just beat the best team in the NFL. I mean, come on.
I know what you're saying, Chud, but come on. Let's be real. So, you know, that's a big difference. I'm assuming Watson would play better than Walker did. I would assume he would take care of the ball better. All those things that would come with, you know, your $230 million quarterback. So, you know, that's a question. He's going to, you know, will he have rust from not having played in a couple of weeks? Is he going to protect his shoulder? Like, all those things will be a question whenever Watson plays, whether it's this week or the next week in Seattle or whenever it is. But this feels like if he's healthy enough and he can throw it well enough, this feels like a good week to get him back in there, right? And get him acclimated and go get a win in Indy. And again, none of the wins in this league are easy. The Niners learned that against the Browns. The Eagles learned it against the Jets. But it feels like a good situation for Watson to get his feet back under him. He's played against Indy a million times. There's got to be a comfort level there from being in the AFC South together. If he can, this feels like the perfect spot to bring him back.
Yeah. I mean, and the Watson-Walker debate in the deal, it just goes back to last week. You know, you remember, you thought you would have picked the Browns had Watson started against San Francisco. And I don't know if I would have. I told you this last week. I told that guy at work. I said, hey, Sunday football, fly across country, right. NFL, not for long. You never know. And that's why you never know this week. I mean, this is the Colts could easily win this game. And if you look at last night, talking again, people at work, yesterday morning. Oh, hey, Chargers are going to win tonight. They're coming off a bye. I go, hey, Dallas had their clock cleaned by the 49ers. They're going to go there. A lot of Cowboys fans are playing the game. And there you go.
Well, yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago, the Colts beat Tennessee, right? And Tennessee's not great, but Tennessee, I don't know if they beat Pittsburgh this year, but Tennessee's got a big win this year. I think, like, Tennessee's not a bad team. The Colts beat them 2 weeks ago. The Colts beat the Ravens, for crying out loud, with Minshew a quarterback, right? The Colts went, I think it was in Baltimore. They went into Baltimore and beat Baltimore. So any team can beat anybody. So, yeah, and, you know, my view of the Colts is probably colored from the fact that I just watched their recent – I mean, I watched their last two, but – in their most recent game, Minshew looked terrible, and he threw three interceptions, and they get drilled by the Jaguars. So, yes, they probably have a bounce back in them. They're playing at home, right? They're 3-3. They're not out of it. That division is a bad division. So, you're right. The Browns are going to get the Colts' best effort, and it's up to them to match the intensity as you try to string these wins.
All right, Scott, before we get to prediction, boy, our sponsors are going to be happy. We're going to have to get another sponsor for this. And I forgot to say that your Deshaun Watson injury updates brought to you by Petrax Pebbles, everyone's favorite breakfast cereal. Now we're going to have to find a sponsor for this. We're going trivia now, huh?
Yeah, we got a I get somebody message me on Twitter, at Neat Gibson. I'm not sure that's a real name, but at Neat Gibson is the Twitter handle or X handle. And he wanted to give a little trivia question every week. I said, sure. I think I forgot last week because he sent it to me on October 6th. So I forgot one, but I didn't forget you, Neat Gibson. So here we go. In 2013, the top Browns rusher had 377 yards. Name that rusher. So first of all, that's not impressive at all. 2013, I'm trying to think. Was that that might have been? I think that was Chud's 1 year. Rob Chudzinski's 1 year, I think, was 2013. Yeah, because Mangini was 9-10, Shermer was 11-12. So I'm going Rob Chudzinski's 1 year, his leading rusher at 377 yards. So I don't know the answer off the top of my head, Chud. I could come up with a guess, but I'm going to let the listeners think about it, and then we'll give the answer next week. And I'll tell the truth whether – I'll have an answer in my head, and then I'll look it up, and I'll tell the truth whether or not I got the answer right.
2013.
377 rushing yards.
That was the leading rusher.
Team leader.
For the entire year.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wonder if it was a quarterback.
I don't know who quarterbacked that year. It's all a blur to me.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, some of those years, they just ran together. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about that one myself. Man, got to think that maybe there was an injury to somebody, and that I don't know. I'd have to think about that year.
That was probably the year, I hope I'm not getting this wrong. I think that was the year they traded Trent Richardson real early, right? Because I think they drafted him in 12, and then Banner came in 13, and traded. I think that's the year he traded Richardson early. So there's probably a big drop off from thinking you're going to have Trent Richardson as your number one guy to not having a running, not having that number one guy.
Okay. Yeah. Gosh. This is where we need Jimmy Donovan. He would have had this answered in 2 seconds.
No, you're right about that.
And then he would have told you who was in second with how many yards. He'd tell you the leading receiver and everything else you need to know about 2013. Trust me on that.
I believe it.
We're trying to put that in the back of our heads that year. So, all right, prediction time. Man, I'll tell you, Scott, I started out 3-0, and I thought I was going to go unbeaten. I thought I had this team down. I thought I was going to go 17-0. But hey, this is the way it works. It's so hard. You get the Ravens, and then, yeah, I mean, again, we both went 49ers. So I'm 3-2. Scott, you're 2-3.
I know, but I'm almost counting that Niners one as a win, Chud, especially against the spread. I got it right against the spread too. So I'm gonna in my head, I'm 3-2.
All right. Well, in Vegas, you're cashing in, but yeah. All right, so you're giving yourself 3-2. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, I'm gonna keep you at 2-3, so I stay one game ahead of you.
Fair enough.
I'll go first. I'm not gonna talk long. I just again, not for long league. Indianapolis, no surprise if they win this game. We just talked about it. It could happen. You could have the letdown for the Browns. You don't even know who's gonna be the quarterback. Blah, 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 blah. But I'm gonna go Browns. This is one of those where I'm gonna trust in the fact that this is a legit team and they're not going to have a letdown, and that they can – what a huge difference, right, being 3-2 right now with a chance of being 4-2 as opposed to 2-3 having to win just to go to 500, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So that's huge. And if you lose somehow, then you're 2-4. I mean, that's such a huge win. It really – it put them back on track. I meant to mention this. And I think I sent this out as a tweet as well. I think probably when you look at it, we maybe expected them to be around 3-2. We just didn't think this would be the recipe of how they got there, right? If they were 3-2, you didn't think the Niners would be one of the wins. So
no, that's a great point. Yeah, yeah.
They're where we thought they might be, and that's a good thing. And now you have a chance to go 4-2. I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to ride the wave and say Browns 23. Colts 16.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said, Chud. I think I have enough faith in this defense that it's not going to have a letdown. It's not going to crash back to earth. I think they see the Colts as a, and this is my guess, is they see the Colts as an opportunity to build on what they did and to get those turnovers we were talking about. I think they think, I don't know how you could not think that Gardner Minshew is vulnerable. They're playing on turf, which means everybody's faster, including Myles Garrett coming off the edge. Would not surprise me if he had a big day. So I'm going to go Browns 20, Colts 13. And I went a little low on the Browns score there. I could see them scoring more, especially if the defense scores a touchdown. But if it's Walker then 20 seems about right. And if it's, even if it's Watson, maybe there's a little, you know, they take it easy with him or whatever coming back. So I'm going to play it safe and go 20-13.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Walker, they showed they could make some big plays. I mean, with Amari Cooper and, you know, that there's definitely faith that they could at least, you know, put some points on the board. So, yeah, this is a game you got to go take, and hopefully they take it. And again, you know, the Browns defense, you could sit there and say, well, you know, maybe they could hold the Colts to 3 or 6 or something like that, 7. But, you know, I think somehow they sneak in and get a touchdown. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how they're getting 16. Right. I just came up with it.
Yeah, no, that completely makes sense, right? I mean, I thought about going lower, and I'm like, eh, you know, first of all, they got a really good kicker. You know, so you can score 1 touchdown and 3 field goals, and that's not crazy, right? So, yeah, weird stuff happens in this league. I don't think it's crazy. That's still, I mean, you're probably still right at the over-under, right? You said it was 37 or 38 or something. And that's right about what the Browns are giving up. They're giving up 15 points a game, something like that. So that's not crazy at all.
Yeah, 39 and a half.
Yeah.
And Scott, before we go, if it sounds like these last couple of weeks I've had a little more pep in my step or maybe a little more excited, after an 0-3 start in fantasy, I've won 3 straight games and I am now 3-3. So I'll tell you, it feels a lot better to get those fantasy wins than the losses. I mean, and I know people out there can relate. 3-3, I'll take it after an 0-3 start.
Well, nobody likes a braggart, Chud, but congratulations. my team struggled this week, but I feel good for you.
Yeah. Well, was the bragging when I told you I became 3-3 or when I told you I was 0-3?
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Let's go get them. Have a good week.
You too, Chud. Thanks as always for doing this. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you could read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.